and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Oh my gosh, it's what month is this? Floodvember? I don't know. It's the rain is actually it's not even comical anymore. But you know what? I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be sharing things in the outdoors here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Our website is wildmichiganradio.com, which will lead you to great places like Conquest Scents, makers of the finest scents that we use and that we know of, and all ATA approved. Make sure you check them out for their Evercalm, their VS1, and their other things they have coming out for 2019 that we've been able to share pictures of and we have in our grubby little hands, and we'll be talking more about here with Doug Roberts in a little while, but that's in shows to come. Also want to thank our friends at Not Just Guns in Mason on Cedar at 127, and please note that they do big auctions every Wednesday night on their website, notjustguns.com. Plus you can walk in there and you can talk to the very friendly and accommodating staff about the firearms you would like to purchase, be it new or pre-owned or accessories or ammunition, or maybe you'd like to sell something to them. Notjustguns.com. Mike and the gang are just absolutely fantastic, and they are the friendliest folks in the gun business. So let's move forward. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with CWD, as we have been, and we like to get different perspectives on this. We've gotten we've talked to Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense. We've talked to Dave Wheeler from Lucky Buck. We've talked to the Michigan DNR. I mean, we've covered, you know, how this is going to impact the industry, how it's going to impact hunters here in Michigan, and, you know, us personally, and just people on a day-to-day basis, and somebody we have not yet talked to, somebody that's been very involved with whitetail, literally walks and sits with whitetail in the Upper Peninsula, is Richard P. Smith, noted Michigan author, videographer, photographer, and just all-around good guy, joins us right now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Duran. I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing well. How are things up there in Tickville? Because I noticed that the western portion of the UP, the threat of Lyme disease is going to be pretty heavy for like the whole west side of the state up on into the Upper Peninsula.
The southern counties in the Upper Peninsula also have lots of ticks in the threat of Lyme disease. In fact, I did contract Lyme disease from a tick in Menominee County a number of years ago. But my wife spotted the bullseye rash, that's classic symptom, and I got antibiotic treatment right away and took care of it very quickly.
Good, good, because we've noticed that that's going to be, the southwest portion of the UP and a lot of the west side, and then the lower peninsula, there's a very high risk for Lyme disease. And I'd forgotten that you had contracted that at one time, but again, caught it early. That's the whole thing, is to catch it early.
Yep.
And otherwise, you could be dealing with a lifetime of issues. But let's talk a little bit about CWD, something that affects the deer, and if essentially could affect all of us, either financially or the way we hunt or everything else.
Right. Well, I've been walking with whitetails for over 20 years, Duran, and I probably have more experience with deer behavior than many of the biologists within the DNR based on my field research walking with whitetails. And it's abundantly clear to me that whitetails have such frequent and close social contact. They're very social animals, that's the primary way that the disease is transmitted among deer. And the DNR has confirmed through genetic testing of the first 8 deer we had with chronic wasting disease in the southern part of the state that does will transmit the disease to their offspring. And I'm sure that's what's happening. There was the first deer with chronic wasting disease in the Upper Peninsula was a 4-year-old doe. You know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the fawns that she had during 2017 and 2018, she transmitted the disease to them as well. And one of the most important things the DNR needs to do to address chronic wasting disease in the UP is to eliminate mandatory antler point restrictions that are in effect in the chronic wasting disease management area in the UP. That's something that's been totally ignored.
That's an interesting take on that. I mean, now how do you feel the APRs? I mean, I know that's limiting the overall take of deer. Do you think we could possibly thin out some with CWD should they be infected with that being lifted?
Yeah, definitely, because the fawns that four-year-old doe would have had in 2017 were yearlings last year. The fawns she had in 2018 will be yearlings this year. The mandatory antler point restrictions that have been in effect in Deer Management Unit 122, which is where that infected doe was, protected her male offspring last year. Mm-hmm. And if that regulation is not changed, it will protect them again this year, which guarantees the disease will spread in the UP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an important change to make.
Richard P. Smith is joining us here on Wild Michigan. I can see where that would be effective, and because this disease does not show up overnight, it's a progressive, slow-moving, but then when the results are there, it's pretty obvious. And of course, like everything else in the state, Richard, we all know this, it's not an issue until it's a crisis.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate the Department of Natural Resources did not jump on this last fall. They knew about the one positive doe, and they said, well, we're going to wait and see what happens and wait until next year. Well, the disease isn't waiting.
Right.
There's infected deer there that are spreading the disease to other animals and contaminating the environment during that year that has gone by. They also need both buck tags on combination deer licenses in the UP are restricted. Hunters with combination deer license are limited to shooting bucks with at least 3 points on one antler and 4 points on one antler. That also protects most yearling bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to change that so that any yearling bucks that dispersed from that chronic wasting disease management unit will be legal for hunters to harvest. Protecting deer with the disease just guarantees it's going to spread.
Right. Richard P. Smith is our guest here. You can find him and a video you have about CWD on your website, richardpsmith.com. Richard is, now I'm not a biologist. This is a guy that hunts and fishes taking a wild guess on these things. Should the doe pass this on to her fawns, do you think it's possible that within a reasonable amount of time that the genetics of these animals would be able to counteract what's going on with CWD to somehow defend it naturally?
Well, that's an excellent question, Duran, but it's one I can't answer. unfortunately, in all of the research that's been done on the disease, it's 100% of the animals that contract it perish. So it's not likely that deer that have the disease can develop a genetic protection
right
to it. So that's not likely to happen since it's fatal in all cases so far.
Right. If they contract it one way, it's not going to happen instantly. But you wonder. I mean, look, we have seen through history and through our records that we've found, you know, things adapt to survive much better than we have over the course of time. And again, it's going to take time, and it may not even be in our lifetime that we see this, because they have the one litter a year. They're not like pigs that do three, you know,
right,
three different litters a year. So it's something we'll have to watch closely. Again, you have a video, which we'll talk about in the next segment, a 20-minute video about how the deer contract CWD on your website, richardpsmith.com. And of course, Richard is on our website as well as one of our favorite people to reach out to. Make sure you hit us up, wildmichiganradio.com. We're being brought to you by Not Just Guns in Mason, South Cedar at 127, notjustguns.com.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State. On our website, wildmichiganradio.com, all over the world. You can find us there. Podcasts and everything else, all being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Doug Roberts out of Davison, Michigan, the big deer farm, and the products that they're producing, ATA approved. Your natural deer scents must have that ATA approved sticker on them when you purchase them. Look for that, and you will find it on Conquest Sense, because that's very important. Again, helping stop the spread of CWD, and this is why these guys have been put together to go through and make sure these products are safe. And that we are using safe products in the Michigan outdoors. Now, Richard P. Smith is our guest, joining us here, talking about CWD in Michigan. Now, Richard, at your website, richardpsmith.com, you've got a 20-minute video about CWD on there.
Yeah, it includes photos and video that I've taken over more than 20 years of walking with whitetails, and shows the close social contact that deer have that a lot of people aren't aware of. I've been able to monitor family groups of deer over their lifetimes, and does and fawns have the closest social contact on a daily basis, multiple times. They mutually groom each other. But what a lot of people don't realize, that deer, family groups of deer, will mutually groom one another throughout their entire lifespan whenever they encounter each other. So they have close social contact throughout their lives. And bachelor groups of bucks that are unrelated form during the summer. They also mutually groom one another. And during the rut, there's even closer, more intimate contact between bucks and does, and even unrelated bucks.
Yeah, it's amazing how social these animals are for being just, you know, a deer in the woods. A lot of people don't go past that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They know, they learn to pattern them. They learn to, you know, to know their habits to a degree, but their social habits are so overlooked. I mean, because it's not something we do on a regular basis.
Correct. Correct. And you hear the DNR being concerned. They claim baiting is a problem because of nose-to-nose contact between deer at bait sites. Well, in reality, the only deer that have close nose-to-nose contact at bait sites are related deer, family members that already have close social contact, more close social contact away from baits than they do at baits. So that the fear about baiting and its role in spreading disease is exaggerated. It's not as great as the DNR is claiming it is.
Now, how big of a range is a social family group? I mean, we know bucks travel some areas during the rut to find, females and the like. But just during the course of the year, I mean, how big is their range?
Well, the adult bucks, first of all, yearling bucks, they disperse from their mother's home range when they're a year and a half to 2 years old. That reduces the chances of interbreeding. Mm-hmm. Among family members. A doe offspring, the female offspring of a doe, often will adopt their home territory adjoining their mother's. So you'll often have family groups of does that will include a doe with a number of offsprings from different years. Does or bucks will occasionally return to their mother's home range, and they will, when they do, they mutually groom with their siblings and other family members. But most of the time, adult bucks seldom return to their mother's home range.
That's interesting stuff. Richard P. Smith joining us here, talking a little bit about the social habits of white-tailed deer, not only here in Michigan, but in general. It always amazes me to see so many in one spot. You know, so many deer in one spot, even throughout the course of the year, throughout gun season and bow season and everything else, but they are so socially interactive as a group and family oriented that, unless you're paying attention to it, you really don't notice.
Exactly. Most people, when they see like a buck and a doe together, they're not going to know the relationship, whether they're related or they're unrelated. I've seen yearling bucks and does that disperse from their mothers. They spend almost the following year together. And you'll see them usually grooming all the time.
Richard P. Smith is joining us here on Wild Michigan. Sorry, just got a little choked up there for a second. Let's go forward, because we got a few minutes left in this segment. I want to talk about the spring. Here we have the new of the spring, and social media is flooded with the, oh, I found this abandoned fawn. And it's just, my wife now, who has learned about the outdoors, who now hunts and fishes and everything else over the course of our relationship together, is screaming at her phone and the computer screen about leave the wild in the wild. Leave it alone. It's not abandoned.
Right. Unlike humans, white-tailed does often stay a safe distance away from their fawns, where they can monitor them through hearing and scent, but they don't want to draw attention to their fawns. That's why they stay a safe distance away from them. Even though people come across fawns and they don't see the fawn's mother, their mother is often watching them, and it's important just to walk away. Take a picture if you want, but don't touch the animal. Leave it where it was. The doe is watching you, and she will take care of her fawn as they always do.
Yeah, it's that way. I mean, with a lot of animals too. My wife and I came across a very young raccoon at my dad's place. Mm-hmm. It was wandering around by itself. I'm like, trust me, mom is not far, and he's not alone. I went up, I snapped a couple of pictures, and it's cute to see him growl a little bit at you. I'm like, look, dude, I'm not coming any closer to you than I have to.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, and sometimes, this is the thing about raccoons, and I've had interaction with them. I had at one time four that seemed to, at the time, to have been left alone. And every morning, they're at my front door. They're, hey, pick me up. And they're climbing all over me and everything else, which technically that's probably not the safest thing to do, everybody, just so you know. But
and raccoons do carry parasites that can infect humans.
Oh, yes, they do. They have a tiny worm through their feces that can get into your skin and then come out places that you really don't want it to come out.
Exactly, and it can be very dangerous for children.
Absolutely. And when kids walk, I've seen the Monsters Inside Me episode about the kid that was wandering around the yard, somehow ingested some raccoon feces, because kids pick things up.
Yep.
They pick things up, they put them in their mouth, no matter what it is. It's a curiosity thing, whatever reason. I'm glad we grow out of that whole thing. But this poor kid had like this pinworm or something of that nature come through, and it exited his ocular area.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to get, because somebody's probably listening to this having breakfast, Richard. And I feel bad. So in short, leave the wild in the wild. RichardPSmith.com is where you need to go to see the video and everything else with him and the whitetails and the CWD. Richard, thank you so much, as always, for joining us here.
More than welcome, Duran. Nice talking to you.
Absolutely. Take care. Richard P. Smith joining us. Tom Nelson, the American Archer, up next on Wild Michigan.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State. Being brought to you by Not Just Guns in Mason, notjustguns.com, located on Cedar at 127 in Mason, Michigan, all over the world at notjustguns.com. And Wednesday nights is their auction night. You know, for all the firearms that they put across the table. I mean, every Wednesday night is a big auction night. And you know what? You're dealing with the people the next day. They are ready for you to go the next day after auction. It's always busy, but they are still the friendliest people in the firearms business. So please check them out, Not Just Guns in Mason, Michigan, and online at notjustguns.com. Tom Nelson, the American Archer on the Outdoor Channel, joins us here right now. I think for half my life, he has been on the Outdoor Channel. Welcome, brother. How you been?
Good, Duran. It's great to be here on the show today.
Dude, it's great to have you back each and every time that you come and talk with us. I was going to start this part off with the little spring tune-up with Bo, but something much more exciting to me came up. It's living vicariously through you, and you've got a spring bear hunt coming up in Saskatchewan that you are currently packing for right now.
I am. As a matter of fact, I shot my bow this morning. It was a little bit wet out there, and got everything packed up, and I'm pretty much ready to go, Grant. It's one of the hunts that I really look forward to. It's a true vacation hunt, as far as relaxing and great fun.
Now, this is not, you know, a drive up spot. You know, it's not like going to the cabin up north, you know, and then taking your stuff out. You're going to be going through quite a bit to get to camp itself.
Yes, we fly up to Saskatoon, then we're picked up there, shuttled to the Churchill River, which is up near Pine House, northern Saskatchewan, and then we'll take jet boats down the Churchill River. And so we camp out in tents, we fish during the day, bear hunt in the evenings. And I mean, no cell service. You don't even see another human until you get back to what we call the outpost. But it's pretty much a very, very remote, very, like I said, more of an adventure hunt, and it's just great fun. Great way to do something in the springtime.
There are a lot of us here, Tom, in the state that we hunt bear. I mean, there's different methods, you know, baiting, hunting with dogs, yada, yada, yada. But it's not springtime. We don't spring bear hunt here, and that's something, it's a lot different, I think.
It is. You know, first of all, we wait all year for fall. You know, that's our time when we get to spend time in the woods, deer hunting or chasing elk, whatever we decide to do, even small game hunting, et cetera. But springtime, so, you know, we do have turkey season, which oftentimes is short, or you don't draw a tag, or you can't go. But bear hunting, you know, you're hunting big game. It's more affordable than you think. I mean, you can drive right across the border to Ontario and bear hunt, and they have some very reasonable hunts, and it's driving distance. But it's for the guy that, you know, wants to try something different. You know, you've done the whitetail thing on your back 40 and such, and you want to try something different. There's nothing in the world quite like sitting in a stand. You've got nothing but your bow and on your lap, and watching a black mass come in, and you go, oh my gosh, there's a bear. And as far as adrenaline rush and heart pounding, there's nothing better, especially if you're on the ground, which is one of the things I like to do, hunt them right there on a ground blind or at a high level. But it's a rush, and it's something that we as hunters need to take more advantage of, because it's a springtime hunt when there's nothing else going on.
You know what? Honestly, I mean, aside from turkey hunting, bear is my favorite thing to do. I've not done it enough to be successful. I mean, I could have been successful. That's a long damn story I'm not getting into from the last one. But it's such, like you said, it's an amazing hunt. I had the opportunity and the good fortune, I will say, to walk up on a 300-pound black bear on the bait pile. And instead of waiting and backing out, I chose to go up on this bear and take a shot. Long story short, my sight was loose. It was a bad day.
But, yeah, that happens.
But I still had the time of my life being eye to eye, literally, with something that could take me out just as fast as I could possibly take it out.
Oh, without question. And that's the neatest stuff. You know, black bears, they fit in that category of dangerous game. I mean, as you said, they can take you out. And, you know, campers get mauled by them, and hunters have been attacked by them. And I've had, you know, in my 45 years of bear hunting, I've had some what you may call close encounters of the bear kind. I mean, right up close and personal, and which adds to the thrill of the chase. I mean, that's just something, you know, that adds to that. Again, that allure of being out there in the dark woods by yourself with, with a bow trying to arrow one of these Bruins. It's an adrenaline rush that nothing, you know, that's better than anything else I can think of.
Tom Nelson, the American Archer, is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Tom, talk about, is there a difference between the spring coat and the fall coat?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that you get with a spring bear is, you know, they come out of hibernation, they've got that long winter hair on them, and it's gorgeous, and it's very, very thick. Now, in the fall, you've got, again, a beautiful hide, but it's a much shorter, more of the summer going into fall hair, and it's so their pelts aren't near as thick. So that's one of the things that I like about springtime, is that they do have the heavier hair. Now, you do have to be observant, because as spring and summer progresses, and we're going up, it may sound late, you know, we're leaving here mid-June to go up bear hunting, but we're so far north in Saskatchewan, the Churchill River, the ice just went off the river here a week ago. So, I mean, it's still, temperatures are, highs are in the 50s and lows, you know, it's still getting down close to freezing at night, but it warms up every week. But that being said, as the weather warms up, bears start to rub. Now, mm-hmm. they'll rub against trees and stuff, just shedding that hair. And so you do have to pay attention as time progresses and it warms up. You'll pick up bears that have rubbed and have bald spots on them. And that usually are the smaller bears. The big boars never seem to be rubbed up. They're always in good shape and such. But it's more those younger 2-, 3-, 4-year-old bears that'll oftentimes be rubbed up. But it's pretty evident. You can see. So, and I'm not interested. That's not why we're up there. So we give those bears safe passage.
Absolutely. Tom Nelson is our guest here, host of the American Archer on the Outdoor Channel. And I always like talking bear hunting with you, Tom, because I know you have such a passion for that. And I'm not going to ask count. I'm not going to ask, you know, anything else. But what is it? I mean, aside from the obvious, the adrenaline and the fact that they could be dangerous, draws you to the black bear?
You know, again, as I stated earlier, Duran, it's a vacation hunt. I mean, it's relaxing. Again, I haven't been out hunting in a while. The fall's still a ways off. You're up there, you're fishing in the daytime, you're staying in tents, you're getting that whole experience, along with the fact that you're going hunting every night. You're up there with good friends, you know, campfires at night. It's just, there's just a lot to it. And it's an adventure hunt. As I said, you know, we're going down the Churchill River. We'll see moose and wolves, otters, you know, all beavers, and just all kinds of wildlife. Every day's, you know, turns up something different. So it's an adventure. I mean, I describe it as a vacation hunt, because you're not getting up at, you know, 5 a.m. to get out to your deer stand or anything. It's stay up late around the fire, sleep in the morning, get your fishing tackle, and head out on the river or lake for the day. It's just good fun.
All right, Tom Nelson is our guest here. We're going to talk more with Tom in the next segment. Real quickly, what are you using for cover scent, or are you using a scent protected clothing?
Well, I'm a big believer in conquest scents. I've used them for years, and I'll be using their bear attractant when I'm up there, as far as a cover up and such. But basically, especially with bears, their olfactory glands, their sense of smell is just unbelievable. So I usually, you know, really watch as far as what I'm wearing and bathe and wash my clothes and try to be, you know, as scent free as I can. And I mostly just play the wind. I hook my tree stands up close to the river or lake, so the bears can't come downwind from me unless they want to go swimming. So
sure.
I use more techniques than that than about anything, Grant.
All right. Tom Nelson, we're going to join him with more. We're going to talk a little bit about spring tune-up for archery. Spring ever gets here. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time, interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, and we are being brought to you by Conquest Sense. ConquestSense.com. Great, great stuff. Look for them, and look for the ATA-approved seal when you buy your cover sense or your tracking sense. Even if it's not Conquest, make sure that that ATA-approved seal is on what you're buying so you know you are doing your part to help fight CWD in the state of Michigan and wherever it is else you hunt. Tom Nelson is our guest right now. He is the host of the American Archer on the Outdoor Channel and has been for many, many years and has been a longtime friend of not only me but many that listened and are a part of the show. Tom, let's talk a little bit about spring tune-up, and I want to talk first, not so much about the mechanics of getting ready, but because we have so much foliage this year, I mean, things are greener this part of June than I can ever remember because of all the rain we've had. First of all, I mean, I know we really don't start cutting back for like another month, month and a half things, but we've got a lot out there right now. And this is going to be messy when we do go to cut stuff back.
You know, I couldn't agree more. I have already spent quite a bit of time in the woods in my deer hunting areas, like I always do, trying to get out there. I just put out trail cameras here last week, just trying to see what, you know, inventory the local deer. But you're right. It's unbelievable this year, the foliage, how high the grass is and the weeds and the brush and the leaves on the tree. Everything's so lush and green out there. And, you know, the smart hunter's paying attention to that and remembering, you know, okay, this tree needs to go, this limb's going to be in my way, you know. You start thinking about that. You don't necessarily have to cut them now, but, you know, at least pay attention to all those little things that need to be done. You know, I'm always looking to see what might have to be trimmed out or whatever, because you don't want to wait till the week before deer season to go out there and start doing that. Take a look right now and get that done. You're correct.
It amazes me. I was looking at the yard. I'm like, I don't recall a part in June where the yard's been this green, you know, and the weeds, you know, the weeds are just popping up everywhere. But at the same time, that's providing forage for our whitetail. Yeah. And, you know, it's giving them lots of water. And if we ever get these hot temperatures, those antlers are going to go crazy.
Yep. Yeah, water's a key. I mean, a drought year, you have poor antlers and such. And a year like this, I think we're going to have incredible antler development. And you know, the plus side of all this rain, this, you know, I'm an anti-mower, so I just get tired of mowing my lawn every 5 days because it's growing so fast. But the food plots just are taking off like a rocket. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen my food plots so lush and thick as they are this year. And, you know, the deer are having a hard time keeping them mowed down, which is good. So there'll be should be plenty of forage for them here as the summer goes by. But it's everything's pointing to some great antler development and great food plots and a great fall.
We saw the first antlered buck that we've seen so far this year. You know, I couldn't really tell how old it was, but the what was coming up from the center of his head was pretty tall, and it was just starting to fork. I mean, this is like, you know, 5-6 inches above his head, and it was just starting to fork. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah, any of those branched antlered bucks that you're seeing here in early June, late May, those are deer you want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, he was unfortunately looking at the side of the road, and of course Sarah's screaming, get away from the road. I'm like, he's just watching traffic, he'll be fine. But I mean, he's gotten this far. But let's talk a little bit about tuning up for, you know, for fall and of course the, you know, the 3D archery season that, you know, unless you're wearing lots of permethrin, have a anti-mosquito device, which just escaped, thermocell, things of that nature, you probably shouldn't be going out anywhere.
Yeah, you know, they're pretty intense, the mosquitoes especially. I know I can testify to that just from, as I said, I've been out in the woods a good deal, and they attack you in force right now. Thankfully, the deer flies aren't out quite yet, but they're just around the corner too, and to me, they're even worse than the mosquitoes. But, you know, it's just one of those things you have to deal with when you're out there. But like I said, with thermocells, bug spray and stuff, you can, you know, put out enough mosquito dope to get out there and get your job done, go out in the middle of the day, or pick a breezy day for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Now, you shoot every day. I mean, that's just
every day
because of what you do. But I mean, but we should probably as hunters probably should, you know, do the same thing a few times a week at least to keep muscle memory going.
Absolutely. absolutely. And there's, you hit it right on the nail on the head, Duran, muscle memory, because I hear it all the time. Well, I pulled my bow out and I'm hitting really good. You know, 20, my pins seem to be right on. Everything seems to be shooting well and such. And then they put it away thinking, oh, it's sighted in and such. But that's just a small part of it. Building up those muscles that you only use when you're drawing your bow, that's such a key, especially on those cold November days when you have to draw that bow back after you've been sitting in the stand a couple hours, or holding it back at full draw, you know, and concentrating on that shot when your nerves are rattled and that big buck is underneath your stand. But you've got to develop those muscles and have that muscle memory where everything just is second nature to you in elementary when that buck presents itself or doe, whatever you're shooting, so that it's all just natural and, again, second nature. So, again, practice is great, you know, but don't, you know, do it as much as you can, but don't think just because your bow still shot in the same hole as it did last year, you don't need to practice. You need to be out there as much as you can.
Yeah, things can happen. I mean, let's talk about something that can happen. Maybe you haven't picked up your bow in a while and you know, you want to get back into it. You know, you know you love it and this and that, but maybe you start experiencing what they call target panic.
Oh, boy. Now you're opening a whole can of worms.
You kind of have to, I know, but it happens.
It happens. Positively. Some of my good buddies have ran into it. And the trouble is getting rid of it. Curing target panic can be a nightmare. And again, I really firmly believe the more you shoot, the less apt you are to experience target panic. And, you know, to describe target panic, basically not being able to hold on the target. You just can't release that arrow, and it's nerve. I've worked with a lot of individuals that have it, and some guys will snap out of it, guys and gals, relatively quick, and other people fight it all their lives or for a year, and it really can discourage you to the point where you don't want to shoot your bow anymore. So it's, again, that's a big reason to practice and be familiar with your equipment all the time, because you're less apt to have that ever arise. But if it does, if you ever have it arise, there's all kinds of different cures, things you can do with it. I highly suggest that you get a buddy or a coach and help you work through it, if at all possible. That'll shorten your recovery, I assure you.
Tom Nelson, host of The American Archer, joining us here on Wild Michigan. If you miss any of these interviews, you can pick them up on our podcast at wildmichiganradio.com. Tom, years ago, we had talked about the possible impact of crossbows on Michigan. At that point in time, they were not allowed. They were not legal to use. Then they became legal to use for small groups of people who were unable to pull a bow back and had medical conditions, and for, you know, some other groups of people. But now they are readily available over the counter. Anybody can use them and everything else. How do you think that has impacted the archery in our state?
You know, that's a good question, Duran. And believe me when I tell you, you're not the only one that's asked me that as far as my personal feelings on it and what I'm seeing as far as somebody that's in the industry. And perhaps the biggest impact that I personally have seen, and you get my own biased views on all this, is the fact that archery sales, and when I talk archery, I'm excluding crossbows for the time being. I'm talking vertical bows, compounds, crossbows, recurves. You're definitely seeing a decrease in overall sales, whether it's the bows themselves or arrows or accessories, et cetera, because of the fact guys are buying crossbows. I mean, you walk in, you look at the price tag on them, you can sight them in a few minutes and be hitting a coffee cup at 30 yards, and you just don't have to spend the time practicing with them that you do with a vertical bow. And those lack of sales in the other archery, you know, as I said, what I term normal archery equipment, trickles right down into releases and broadheads and new arrows, et cetera. And so archery sales have definitely, you can talk to any pro shop owner, archery sales have slipped here in Michigan drastically. They're down a lot from where they were here years ago. And I'm all about the tradition of the sport, too, of archery. You know, here in Michigan with Fred Bear, Bear Archery, we have such a deep, deep, you know, history and tradition of what we call modern-day archery and bow hunting here in the state. And I just worry, Duran, that we're going to lose that and it's going to trickle away. And like I said, you're already seeing it as far as the amount of people around where I hunt, Duran,
mm-hmm.
and you're getting me rambling now. But my one neighbor, who we're down to one, my wife and I, and then one other neighbor that still was shooting vertical bow. Everybody else has switched over to crossbow. He has switched over. Now Beth and I are the only people shooting in our neighborhood a vertical bow and not a crossbow.
Well, maybe there'll be a renaissance, Tom. That's what I'm hoping. Anyway, nothing against the crossbow. I'm just saying,
no.
I'd like to see a renaissance in the old recurve and the compound bow. But as always, man, we appreciate you and appreciate you joining us here on Wild Michigan.
My pleasure, Duran. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Tom Nelson, the American Archer, also Richard P. Smith, noted author, videographer, photographer, talking about CWD and some other great stuff. You can find that on our podcast. And find all of the shows and everything else about us at wildmichiganradio.com. Thanks to Conquest Sense and Not Just Guns for bringing it to you.